Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for Thursday, May 3rd, the marvelous month of May. And a special greetings to all those who were born in May, like myself. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today's program, which concludes today at 2 p.m. Our producer is Mr. Dennis Johnson. First day back from holiday, and you should see how he's dressed. He looks like he's going to get married today. Tie and everything. Dennis gives a big smile. His voice will be the first you'll hear when you call us today at 43-41-790. Of course, the big news is the economy. The central bank governor, Cleveson Haynes, his report on the January to March performance of the economy was delivered yesterday, and the news was not good at all. Essentially, the governor is saying the economy is sick and it needs some strong medicine, strong and consistent medicine. And if you can, of course, follow everything that was said regarding the governor's report card in today's Daily Nation. And in fact, their headline is, "In a deep ditch, the central bank governor reports economy contracts in the first quarter. Reserves are so low that they need a bailout from the private sector." And of course, he's talking about tightening belts even more. Now, of course, we're going to be talking about that. And the political campaign is, of course, in full swing from this weekend. On Saturday, the opposition, Barbados Labour Party, the majority opposition party, they are going to be launching their campaign. And on Sunday, the Democratic Labour, the ruling Democratic Labour Party, they will launch their campaign as well. So we are going to be off literally and running from this weekend, and it's going to be really, really, I can imagine how frenetic it's going to be. What else is in the news today? Well, the situation in the South Coast seems not to be progressing at all positively. And that's really sad for our country. And it is one of those things that we really will have to look at. We just can't keep just talking about it. Something seriously needs to be done. The officials from the Barbados World Authority, of course, they're doing their best, but we clearly will need to see some more results on what is happening. Anyhow, as I said, the big story is the economy. And I have on the line with me noted regional economist, Ms. Marla Dukaran. Marla, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning, Sanka, and good morning to all of your listeners.
It's great to have you. What is your take on what the governor is saying about the Barbados economy?
Well, you know, what the governor reported, of course, was not entirely unexpected, but not exactly the most encouraging news either. You know, he, for example, reported that the economy contracted by 0.7% in the first quarter of this year, according to their estimates, based on a decline in real output in tourism, slower construction activity, a late start to the sugar harvest, and weaker overall domestic economic activity. So in other words, it was broad-based decline as opposed to a decline based on any one factor. So that's, you know, the first most striking thing that he reported. He did report some improvement in the level of reserves. He was saying it's equivalent of U.S. $211.5 million, which he calculates at 6.9 weeks of imports, but I calculate at 5.5 weeks. But whether it's 6.9 or 5.5, the point is that it's about half or less than half of what it should be as a precaution. And that's also not comforting. And according to the figures for debt and debt to GDP, nominal GDP, gross public sector debt to GDP, according to my calculations, based on what the central bank reported, is now about 160%, which makes it the third highest in the world after Japan and Greece. And that, I think, was for me the one of the more striking developments.
Could you repeat that, please? I think that, could you repeat that point? I want to.
Okay.
You were saying again, it's as high as Greece. We're third behind Greece and Japan.
Yes. So if you take total, gross public sector debt, mm-hmm. which is inclusive of the debt that the NIS and the central bank hold, and you calculate that level of debt as a percentage of nominal GDP as reported by the central bank in their report yesterday, you get a figure of just about 161%.
Okay.
That would make it Barbados' level of debt the third highest in the world. When I look at the IMF figures last night, Japan is at 236% of GDP. Greece is at 182% of GDP, and Barbados is at 161% of GDP.
Wow. What is the solution out of this situation? In your opinion, what is the solution? How can Barbados extricate itself from this?
Well, when your debt is at that kind of level, what it means is that you spend so much money servicing the debt that you don't have money left over to take care of other demands, such as fixing the sewage problem, making sure that the hospital is well equipped, and et cetera, et cetera. So what you have to do first and foremost is you have to deal with the level of debt and the cost that it costs to service that debt. And the way to deal with the level of debt and the debt servicing cost is you have a debt restructure. Now, many countries in the region have had debt restructures. You've had Jamaica, Grenada, St. Kitts, Guyana, Haiti. Almost everybody in this region has had sovereign debt restructure and have emerged much stronger and more resilient and robust in order to take on now a growth strategy. You can't have a growth strategy that's meaningful with a level of debt like this. It will just crush your growth efforts based on how much money the government has to spend to service this debt. Okay? So that's the first thing I would say we need to do. We need to have a comprehensive, meaningful restructure. And the second thing is we need to have a fiscal responsibility framework, which the governor, of the Eastern Caribbean governor, Timothy Antwine, says we need to call it a fiscal resilience framework, basically which outlines the parameters within which government has to operate. In other words, you set limits on the size of the fiscal deficit, you set limits on the level of debt, and as a matter of fact, as the opposition leader in Barbados, Mia Motley, had pointed out in an interview that I had with her recently, Barbados was very good at maintaining fiscal prudence and fiscal responsibility for several years post-independence up until the turn of this century where things started to deteriorate even before the global financial crisis. So whilst Barbados had been known to be an outlier in the region in terms of fiscal prudence and fiscal responsibility, perhaps it is time for us now to legislate a framework that would prevent this kind of fiscal responsibility from taking place again.
Mm. The last question I would want to ask you, because I want to thank you again for coming, because I know how your time is today in particular.
Thanks.
The parties that are contesting the election here, none of them have indicated if they would go to the International Monetary Fund or any other multilateral. Mm-hmm. They're talking about a homegrown policy, mm-hmm. and that type of thing. I mean, mm-hmm. is that really realistic? Isn't it better to go to the International Monetary Fund where you can have a program with their help and it's totally structured and you be under their guidance, of course, in the next 2 to 4 years. But the point is that Barbados would, be at the end of the day, be able to have a stronger economy where, with proper growth? I mean, what is your take on this whole thing about going to the International Monetary Fund? Is it a bad thing?
Well, okay, the way I would answer that question is, first of all, going to the International Monetary Fund is not a bad thing. You just have to look at Jamaica and Grenada to see how a homegrown fund-supported adjustment has worked very well for them. But I also want to highlight to you that I think that you would never find a moment in the run-up to an election, or sorry, a party, I should say, in the run-up to an election that will say, we are going to go to the IMF, and that's our plan. You just won't see it happen, okay? Now, even your governor,
Mr. Haynes.
Leveston Haynes, mm-hmm. yes, outlined his view that we should consider, or we could consider an IMF program. Now, with respect to what you term homegrown, in any event, an IMF program is not branded properly. An IMF program is never one where the IMF imposes certain policies on the country. What the IMF does is they come to negotiation with the government and they would say, okay, this is our diagnostic of what the problem is. These are the standard policy recommendations that we would put to you that are necessary to address the problems that you have based on the diagnostics. It is up to the regime to decide what policy approach they deem to be the most appropriate given the options available to them. Now, I remember Governor Antwine of the ECCB, the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank, for example. He gave us an example once in a recent interview with him and the IMF that I did, where he said when he was the financial secretary in Grenada and they basically defaulted on their bond because they had suffered this massive hurricane damage some 10 years or so ago, he said one of the things that they told the IMF said that, you know, you have to reduce your fiscal spending on wages and salaries. Now, the two ways you can do that is you can reduce wages themselves or you can reduce your headcount. But in a country where they were facing 20% unemployment already, the government said, look, we don't think that this is a feasible approach for our country. We think it will actually do more harm than good. And so what they did was they devised a very strict attrition program via which people, when they leave, nobody will be rehired to replace them. And it was combined with certain restrictions on wage growth and that kind of thing. And that strategy ended up working for them. So this is why an IMF program is not, it is by definition a homegrown program. In other words, is what I'm saying to you. The IMF doesn't impose policy direction on you. They tell you, these are the parameters. You need to bring your fiscal deficit down by this much. You need to cut your current account and the balance of payments by this much. You pretty much have flexibility as to how you're going to achieve that. So in any event, it will be a homegrown program, even if it was the support of the IMF, is what I'm trying to say. So to think that you're going to have a homegrown program without the IMF misses the whole point. Even with the IMF, it will be homegrown. The other thing is that if you do a program without the support of the fund, look at what happened to Belize. That's what Belize is trying to do. And they have failed miserably. If you do a fund-supported program, what happens is you get the support of the other multilateral lending agencies, the CDB, the IDB, and so on, will come in and also give their financial support and technical support as well. You have greater transparency and accountability because the IMF will report on a periodic basis publicly how the program is progressing. And then you engender a greater sense of confidence that way. confidence both domestically and abroad in terms of foreign investors wanting to invest in your country. So I think that the idea of a quote-unquote homegrown program without IMF or other multilateral support is actually not a good idea. I think if you're going to do an adjustment, I mean, since 2013, an adjustment was articulated for Barbados, and I don't think that we accomplished what we set out to do, which was to build back the level of reserves. We have just seen reserves decline to now the lowest level in, let me see, since January 1996. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, therefore, the homegrown program that was articulated by this government since 2013 has not worked. So, why, since we tried that, then I would say, why not try a fund-supported program?
All right. Well, look, we have to take a break for some commercials. And how long will you be able to stay with us?
I would say till 10:30, if that's okay with you.
10:30, that's perfect. We'll be coming right back, okay. So just hold.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Brass Stacks. We'll take one call, and it's about the economy. Marla Ducran is on with us. Good morning, you're on Brass Stacks.
Hello, hi, good morning, Fanka.
Wesley, good morning, how are you?
I not too bad at all.
Good, I haven't heard you in a while, man.
Yeah, because I did get myself a little time break.
No. It's just because Dennis was in the wrong, so you stopped calling. It's all right.
Well, that's okay. That's true, too. And I had to keep the call yesterday, but then after the Central Bank report, uh-huh. that paint Barbados in such a glorious place to be at this time, I get me so frustrated, I put down the phone to tell the truth.
All right.
You know?
I have Regional Economist Marla Ducran on the line. And would you like to ask her a question?
Yes, I would like to. Before she goes? No, you must appreciate that I was unprepared, right? To question Ms. Ducran. But I would still like to ask her one question. But would you allow me to go into my own little
after.
Movie after?
Yes.
I would like. Good morning to you, Ms. Ducran.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Well, you know that I'm your biggest fan. I like to hear you. I will listen to you whole day. I told you that already. By the way, if you don't think I'm out of the way with this question, though. Family at all, okay. With Ducran?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Pardon me?
Could you repeat that? Sorry?
I asked if you are family to Winston Ducran.
That's a very good question. I get that question all the time. If I had a dollar for every time I got that question, I would not need to work.
Okay.
Winston and I, it appears, as we say in Trinidad, I don't know if you all have this expression in Barbados, we might be pumpkin vine relatives.
Pumpkin vine.
Yeah. Dennis,
bring that cross there.
Yeah, but more important than that is we are very good friends and have a very good working relationship, which I think is more important and more significant than whatever pumpkin vine DNA relationship we might have.
Okay. All right. Well, that clears up. Question to you, though, Ms. Ducran.
Mm-hmm.
What measures do you think would the new government have to put in place? Right, whether a BLP government or a Democratic Labour Party government, what measures you think or the approach you think to bring Barbados back in line in terms of the economy and working capital?
Okay, so this is a very good question, and it's one that I outlined when I spoke at the ICAB.
It was ICAB.
Yes, right. This is where you and I met, Sanka.
Yes.
Not so?
True.
Right. So the governor yesterday in his report announced that the fiscal deficit that is estimated for the fiscal year just ended in March was just about $400 million Barbados dollars. going from about 500 million, 524 million previous fiscal year. Now, the first thing any government is going to have to do is they're going to have to address the fiscal deficit by cutting fiscal expenditure and or increasing fiscal revenue. The reason for that is because the debt level is already, as I just discussed a little bit earlier on this program, the debt level is already about 161% of GDP, which is the third highest in the world, which is not sustainable and is putting significant constraints on the government's ability to fund very important capital spending, for example, on road improvement and waste and sewage and water treatment plants and so on, okay? So that's the first thing that's going to have to happen. They're going to have to bring this deficit down to a very low level, let's just say 1 to 2% of GDP. In other words, cut it in half from, say, 400 million now to about 200 million. So you're going to have to find 200 million Barbados dollars somewhere in the very short term. The second thing, which I also discussed a little earlier on the program, is that the level of debt, again, is unsustainable, and it is my view that there will have to be a debt restructure in order to bring the level of debt down and make the repayment of this debt more achievable, more readily achievable, given the fiscal constraints that exist. So what you would do is you will approach your creditors. So, for example, the large pension funds and mutual funds and the banks, who are the largest holders of government debt, in addition to the central bank and the NIS, and you would approach them and engage in a negotiation of debt restructure. You would, for example, negotiate to send the maturity date of these instruments further into the future. You would try to negotiate to bring the coupon or interest cost on these instruments down and make your debt repayment much more comfortable. This is what, for example, was done in Jamaica, St. Kitts, Grenada in the last, say, 6-7 years. So those are the two, I would say, most critical things that any government would have to do up front.
Okay.
To address the fiscal imbalance so that then you could start thinking about, you know, once you stop the hemorrhaging, you can start thinking about what do you do about growth, what you do about jobs, et cetera, et cetera.
Ms. Dukaran?
Yes?
Ms. Dukaran, do
yes?
you believe there's hemorrhaging in the
Wesley, while you get your thoughts together, because Ms. Dukaran has to run soon, I'll just ask her this question. You think about what you want to ask her. In our debt restructuring, the NIS, will they have to take some sort of cut of any sort in terms of...
Well, you know, that's a very difficult question to answer. You would recall that first of all, the other alarming thing in Barbados to me right now, which is very disappointing, is that for the second time in the past 4 years or so, the IMF report, the Article 4 report, has not been published. So the last time I saw an assessment of the NIS was in last year's Article 4 report, where the IMF had reported basically that, you know, the NIS is already underfunded. And if you have an adjustment program that brings your fiscal spending down, one can imagine it might have implications for you know, unemployment and the benefits that people would need to draw on from the NIS. Over 74% of the NIS's portfolio is government paper, government debt. So if you have a debt restructure, one would imagine that the NIS has to play a role in that restructure. However, the NIS doesn't have the capacity to take any hit at this point in time. They're already underfunded and struggling to see how it will honor its obligations going forward based on the constraints it's facing. So my guess is there will have to be a special intervention for the NIS. In other words, in my view, if there is a broad-based sovereign debt restructure, government debt restructure in Barbados, there has to be a special intervention designed to save the NIS, is what I would imagine. Whether the NIS's debt will then be restructured separately in a way that differs from the other debt holders, and or whether the IMF is going to be recapitalized from an external agency like Development Bank, for example. I'm not sure how it will look and what the design will look like, but I'm just saying that given 75% of their portfolio, given the latest figures I'm aware of, is in government debt, I would imagine that the NIS would need a special intervention.
All right. Lizzie, you have your question now?
Wages and salaries. Wages and salaries in the public service. How would that be affected, if any?
Well, if you have to cut fiscal spending, right? I'm looking at the government spending figures released in the Central Bank report yesterday, right now. And the largest line item here is grants to public institutions, $787 million. Then that is followed by wages and salaries of $781 million, followed by interest payments for debt of $763 million. So those are your largest line items in the government fiscal expenditure. So my guess would be that those three items have to be addressed. Grants to public institutions, in other words, public institutions that are loss-making, for example, have to be rationalized and or divested. Wages and salaries, now there is a restriction on cutting wages because of the legislation that does not allow the government to unilaterally cut wages. But there is, as I have said before, and I believe this, in this program, if you have to cut wages, generally you have two options. You can cut headcount or you can cut the wages. Now, I am of the belief that it is better to have a job that pays you less than to have no job. In other words, it would be better to have a wage cut versus a reduction in headcount. That's the way I said it, but this is not really, I think you have to have a special majority in the parliament or something like
two-thirds
that.
Two-thirds majority.
I'm not right. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure how feasible it would be if it can be achieved. And I'm not sure how the labor movement will feel about that. I feel that there will have to be some adjustment on that number. It has come down over the years. I'm seeing that it peaked. There was a recent peak in 2013 of $882 million. It's now down to $781. So we already cut about $100 million over the past, say, 5-6 years of the wage bill. But that's not a big cut for that length of time. You know, so they have to address it. How they will address it, of course, time will tell.
But transfers and subsidies is still rather high, though. That's the thing.
Franka?
Yes. Wesley, just hold a second, Wesley.
No, I just want to tell you one thing quick before Miss... listen, in fairness to the other callers and to the program, I would give a...
All right, Wesley, so thank you very much. All your one. Thank you. All right. Miss Dukaran.
Thank you.
Marla.
Yes.
You want to wind up because it's now 10:35?
Okay, sure.
Yes.
You want me to make some closing comments?
You can make some closing comments. I made the point to you about transfers and subsidies are still extremely high. And that obviously is a major area of concern as well, because we're talking statutory corporations.
Yeah, and the largest component of transfers and subsidies is grants to public institutions at $787 million, out of $1.2 billion transfers and subsidies total. So that's really what has to be addressed inside of this, grants to public institutions.
Yeah.
So the public institutions have to make sure that they're financially self-sufficient to a greater extent than they currently are. That's a huge drain right there.
Yep. And the thing is, what is that, that was one of the major issues in the 2013 election. And here it is, 5 years later, and it's still a major issue. Anyhow, any closing remarks?
Well, there haven't been any divestments, really, have there?
Not really. Not really.
No. I mean, and I note, for example, that the governor mentioned yesterday in his address that the central bank might seek support from the private sector as had obtained in 1991 for the level of reserve. He said, roughly 60 to 70 million U.S. dollars in support from the private sector with respect to the level of reserve. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that, for example, Jamaica had done as well back in its history, and people did come forward and give support. I'm not sure whether he is really going to roll out this appeal, but I saw that he made that appeal, and that was quite, I suppose it was a novel suggestion from this governor at this point in time.
It also demonstrates the severity of economic situation at this time as well.
Indeed, that is indeed the case. I think it's fair to say that this year is going to be a turning point in Barbados' history on many respects. But I believe that the people of Barbados, the private sector, the public sector, and the people in general of Barbados have what it takes to turn their country around. If you look at Grenada right next door, that was flattened by a hurricane on more than one occasion, and they were able to bring their economy back to resilience and growth and stability. Barbados is well poised to be able to do that once we take the right measures and we take them in time, up front, early. In the next 2 to 3 years, you will begin to see the benefits.
All right. Well, look, thank you so very much for your time. I know how precious it is, and I thank you so much for always being there for me. I'm being there for the
most
people
welcome,
of Barbados. Okay.
Most welcome. It's my pleasure. Have a lovely day.
You too. Take good care. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Brass Stats. This is Sanka Price here with you. Dennis Johnson is our producer. And, of course, our call numbers as usual, 434-1790. And you can also reach us via WhatsApp at 266-4862. You're on the air. Welcome.
A blessed good morning to you, Sanka.
Good morning, sir.
How are you doing?
I am well. And you?
This is the man you call Mr. Agriculture. Anyone else trying to be that way will be counterfeit. And I hope that all is with you. I am glad to hear my friend Mr. Johnson is back. I hope that he had a peaceful and a restful holiday. Mm-hmm.
He looks well rested, but the next few days we can knock the shine off of him. So what can we do for you today, sir?
I'm not in agreement with that at all, Sanka.
That's the norm in this business. You come up, you look really good for the first few days, and then after that, you look like if you could do it a holiday. That's the norm.
Anyhow, Sanka, you know, I'm not the economic man, the finance man, but I'm glad that you used the little knowledge that you had to invite the Trinidad lady to explain to the listening public, because, you know, yesterday we had some very sad news in terms of this economy. But it only goes to show, Sanka, that all along, you know, and you had the farmer, and I have great respect for people who go to get higher levels of education and who have the experience and sometimes may have the know-it-all. Sometimes they may make wrong decisions, they may make mistakes because at the end of the day you're human. But I believe personally that when you put persons in certain strategic positions, that you ought to respect them. And I'm referring now to Dr. Delay World, because he was the man there before, and it seemed from
The governor is a creature of the Minister of Finance.
Right.
That is the reality. He works for the Minister of Finance and the government. Mm-hmm. Although he's supposed, he or she, supposed to be independent in the sense that they are supposed to, they're really supposed to just give advice. They're not the ones who decide policy. Mm-hmm. And one of the concerns, and this is, I think, where the public saw Dr. World's role, and I think this is where possibly he ran afoul of the present administration, is where it seemed that he was dictating policy. In fact, one of the points that was noted yesterday by Mr. Haynes, he was asked about if he thought the IMF should come in, and he said, you never give advice to the Minister of Finance in public, okay? And we know that based on a number of things that were said by the former governor, that he tended to say certain things that made people think, well, okay, who's running things? Okay? But we really can't say what you just said, because that would be inaccurate. The figures were all there. If you suggested that they were done a little differently, well, fine, because they were presenting the way how the statistics were presented prior to were changed somewhat, not much, but somewhat, so that one had to, you know, look a little bit more to find certain things. But he gave all the information. Okay.
Yeah, but Sanka, how you gotta look at it too, you gotta be fair with our economy and our society. Mm-hmm. Because as you know, it has not been business as usual. We have been dragging our feet in the mud for too long with certain things where economic policies are concerned, and with certain financial institutions struggling, the middle class completely wiped out, the poor man just struggling. So what I'm saying is that although you're
saying
that...
The middle class is not completely wiped out, man. Come on, don't make them sort of broad statements. People may be challenged because they have so many expenses, all the allowances are gone and whatnot. But believe you me, people are surviving. Human beings survive no matter what. You look at Haiti. I mean, you can want a country that has been devastated by more natural disasters, and then by some of the most incompetent and corrupt governments ever in the region. Hold on. And yet the people are struggling to survive. They still have that creativity, that talent, and wherever they go, they try to make a difference. Wherever they go, they try to survive. That is what human beings do. It's not a barbarian thing. It's not a Haitian thing. It's not an American thing or a Russian thing. It's a human being thing. People will survive. Yes, Barbados is in a challenging position. The governor made that point. Yes, all of our allowances have been taken away, but people will survive. And some people will write here and tell me that, you know, that there have been a lot of foreclosures. And I know a couple of people myself who would have rented out their house and moved back in at their parents' home or relatives' home because of the situation. And I'm aware of that. Things are bad. But you cannot come with a sweeping statement that the middle class has been wiped out, because that's not true.
But, Sanka, we have to be. You see, that's the problem I have sometimes with our people, you know, that we don't like to be to hit certain things head on. And you're a man I have respect for, and I'm glad that you are engaging with me rather than going at one at a head, because I like the engaging, because I don't know everything, you don't know everything. The only Almighty God who created this earth knows everything. So, but what I am saying, Sanka, we have been under severe pressure. And you reiterated that just now, and we are under severe pressure. And what I'm saying, as you rightfully said, the central bank governor has to work hand in hand with the finance minister, and I understand that, and I'm total agreement. It does not make any sense that two people that work in the same area coming out with two different things, because the people outside trying to get a little relief will want to know what is happening. But this administration has refused good consultancy over a period of time. How much downgrades have we had in the last 2 years, Sanka? I can't remember now because I lost track. How much downgrades we had?
I think it's 23.
Good in 166 square miles to you personally, Sanka? And as a man that born in Barbados, live in Barbados, have a family in Barbados, and try, and I know you make a valuable contribution to this society and a lot more others.
Mr. Agriculture, I can assure you that the present regime would not have wanted one downgrade. You see, the reality is, at the end of the day, politicians love to stay in power. Okay?
That is true.
And therefore, what would have happened during the tenure of the present administration is one where, and they will be defended it, they've started already, and they will defend it and they will tell you what they want to say. But the reality is that they, I think that they tried their best. Unfortunately, their best was not good enough, as we have seen. And the governor, as the governor said, and I can actually quote him, that he made the point that all the adjustments, he said, our efforts to date, and I'm reading here now from the actual press release that was sent out yesterday. I mean, he's talking about the outlook. He said, our efforts to date have not resulted in bringing the fiscal deficit to a manageable level. That's the governor saying that. So what I'm saying is not what Sanka's saying, is what the governor is saying, okay? Let me get that right for all the yard fouls and other paying cops that I can call here later on and complain. And I make no apology for calling them that. Okay?
I understand.
But the reality is that I'm also saying that no administration in this country would want that to happen. So clearly, they were not able to manage the situation adequately, and we have what we have. We have a big hole. We are now the third most indebted country in the world, and it's not going to be easy to get out of this. And what we as a people now have to do is that we have to look very seriously at what is being said on the political platforms, what is being said in those manifestos as far as the way forward is going, because we know for sure what the state of the economy is. That is one thing that we do know.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Now, let me tell you something. Now, we this is the silly season, and you know you can get all the political people. You know where my political alliance lies. I don't have to go back there. It will not change. But what I'm saying is I have to look to better myself, my family, the area I live in, and you understand what I am saying. It does not make the sense jumping and hollering for murder, and then at the end of it all, whenever the dust is settled after the 24th, going into the 25th, the 26th of May, whoever's elected to office, that we put somebody there that is not capable of bringing this economy back from poverty to prosperity, Sanka. And that's what worries me personally as an individual, because the last couple of years have been very, very bad, Sanka. And I don't got to go back to say that not a bus wasn't bought, not a sanitation truck wasn't bought. We pushing our agriculture downhill and downhill and downhill over and over. I know how passionate I am about it. And then the import bill has quadrupled over a period of time, Sanka. And then we are, and then you, then we have rethinking so-called education Barbadian people will want us to go along that it is business as usual, Sanka. It cannot be business as usual.
All right, sir.
And that is what worries me as an individual, Sanka.
And a lot of other, and a lot of us. Thank you very much, and let's go to the next call. You're on the air.
Good morning, Sanka.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah. Before I start, I even want at least, you know, I'm very short at all things, but I would like, know that my main producer is back on, Dennis, I would like an indicator coming from you that when I'm finishing, tell me, well, you got one more minute. Or this is your last summers up. I don't want to be cut and destroyed on what I'm saying unless I go off the line, which would be defamatory, and that is which I don't participate in. So I would like to inform you that give me the sign that I have one moment and let me wrap up, just as you give Ms. Dukaran just now. I'm not saying I'm Ms. Dukaran, but I would like the privilege to know when you're wrapping up instead of being cut. I continue
your
talking,
point is taken.
And then you
your
are.
Point
good?
Is taken. Go right ahead, sir.
Good. No, now, Sanka, I heard you this morning, and I heard Miss Dukaran. I got one problem with what she said, and I will get to that. But let us look at what the problem really is that facing the country. We know it is an economic problem. Would you take up a mechanic that have no knowledge of building a house to build a house? A mechanic by trade here. And you gone for a mechanic and say you're going to build a house? That makes sense to you?
I've heard you with this a similar argument.
All right. Okay. Well, if you heard
let me finish to make the point to you. I've heard you with a similar argument.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I understand your argument. I think those who would have heard it and understand the argument. But don't ask me a question. You just make your point. Okay?
All right, good. All right. But what I am saying, we have two political, major political organizations that be facing the polls on the 24th. I don't mind the other splintered groups. They have their right to speak and they have their right to form a party. It is clear in this country that the present person who's serving as prime minister do not believe in economists. He said an economist is like a blind man in a dark room looking for a black cat. So if it's an economic problem, it is plain to the eyes in the minds of the public who got concerned about their country that he would not be the person to take this ship out of the economic waters because he is not in favor of anything. And we just had an economist who was advising us that you need this to do and the next thing to do. But the present prime minister is not in favor of any economist. Now, where are you going to pick up with Ms. Dugaran? We always talking about cutting this and cutting that. We never, if you have $2,000 in your hand and you want to buy something or feed your family with that, and it is not enough, the best thing for you to do is look for extra cash, either by working or otherwise. But you don't say, well, I got $2,000, and in order to keep this $2,000, I got to cook one day a week. That means you're starving the children, you can suffer with malnutrition. But the fact remains is this. What an economist and sensible people does is look for avenues to substitute that $2,000. Now, when you take up the assets of the country, take for instance the Hilton was bringing in money. So if the Hilton bringing $1 million, it means, therefore, that the taxpayers don't have to look for that $1 million because the government takes in money in order to run the country. But you're selling off the assets. And at the same time, these things has to be done. It means, therefore, that you have to tax people out of sight. And it can come the time that you cannot tax no more because you are not looking for things to be productive to substitute for the taxes.
Let me just jump in here with you. I think what you're really trying to say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, of course, is that selling assets like the Hilton and BNTCL, they're short-term measures because once sold, you can't sell it again.
And, of course.
And the amount of money it brings in is not, given the enormity of the debt, the amount of money is just a drop in the bucket. So therefore, it would be better to have a more comprehensive plan that really addresses the entire debt situation and addresses how we go forward, rather than this piecemeal thing of selling off things that doesn't seem to be part of a total and overall plan, because I suspect that's where you're going with this.
Exactly.
Good. All right. Continue.
You have
2 minutes.
Okay. Now let me go. I kept hearing people saying, oh, the Barbados Labour Party had things when it was good, when things were flowing. Let us look at 1994. When Owen Seymour Arthur picked up this government, things weren't flowing. That is what it brings you to how do you manage your economy and your plans. You had people that went home and lose their jobs and lose their houses and all sorts of things. An economy that was in disarray. How did you get that economy picked up to the extent that you could hear the same people telling you, the Democratic Labour Party, that things was good? And they should do this, and they should do that. We can't want no more being done under Owen Seymour Arthur. After wresting this economy from off the rocks, where the late Dr. Richard Christopher Haynes told this country that the policies of the Democratic Labour Party then was like backstreet abortion. in his own words. I know you're going to hear people telling you, asking,
sorry,
are you going to get this money from?
Let me stop you right here. You said that Sir Richard Haynes, said something about backstreet abortion.
Yes, he did.
No. It was St. John. Bernard St. John.
That is not true.
Okay.
I can argue with you. Go and check your fact. One thing I did do is keep my fact.
If you recall, okay, and I mean this is all, I can't even say academic, but this is all talk, shop talk, really, quite frankly, because it's really irrelevant now. But you would remember that the Barbados Labour Party said what they would be doing in 1986 for the 86 election. They outlined their proposals and whatnot. The Democratic Labour Party, with Richie Haynes, made in the terms of the budget, he then said about all the things that the Democratic Labour Party is going to do.
The Prime Minister said it was a back raise.
Yes, he said it was a back raise.
A back raise. Okay. That was Bernard St. John.
Good. And but he did say it was a back
Richie
raise.
Richie Haynes said the policies of Salad was like a backstreet abortion. Two different things.
Okay, good. Okay. We're on the same wavelength now. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, good. Yeah, okay. All right, sir. Well, look, thanks. Thanks for the call. And thanks for taking me down memory lane there. We take another call. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Miss. Not too bad. I could probably let you get a bit too simplistic too. A mechanic can also have what I call multiple skills. In other words, he could be a good mechanic and also be a good carpenter. Always remember that. There are people with multiple skills. The other thing is, when you were talking to the economist, and she was making the comparison of growth in Grenada on growth in Jamaica, what you should have asked, sir, what are the wages and salary in Jamaica? And what are the prices of the goods in the supermarket in Jamaica? And Jamaica is a bigger country, than Barbados, and has more resources. And the unemployment rate in Jamaica, you should have had that information pulled down to let the listeners know. And you always does it all the time. The other thing, I hear you talk about this government, they have to do this and do this. What are your recommendations for the new government then coming, that who will promise the people of Barbados that they're going to get a raise?
You asked me what? Sorry, repeat again.
You say that this government should do this and do that.
I said government should do something.
You said last time we spoke to you that this eventually whichever government take office, they have to send home people. The other government said they're not sending home other people. So
I said, look at the recommendations that are being made.
Yes.
I'm not an economist. I have my own perspectives. But the whole point about it is that the what is on the table right now has been put down there by Dr. Worrell and a few others. We have an echo going on here, so turn off your radio, please.
I don't have a radio. I never keep my radio on.
Dr. Worrell has put that on the table, people going home. But the whole thing about it is that is one of the considerations. So I would throw some of the considerations that have been put there on the table. It's not my personal perspective. I have my personal perspective, which I don't generally bring here.
But you know, they said an economist is a refined, educated speculator. Have you ever heard that term, that definition of what economist is? You know, economist is really good, but what you call a trial and error.
And sir...
Uh-huh.
You know, all right. I wouldn't say what I'm really thinking. I don't think I should say what I'm thinking right now. You go right ahead.
Yeah, but I want you know to bring the minister of the leader of the opposition. I challenge her to a debate.
You know, you see, the people who are in charge of this country are the ones who should be telling us what they plan to do. All right. The opposition leader has said a number of things, one of which have been talked about on this program and other programs. But I keep hearing people saying, the opposition leader got to come and say this. The opposition leader could say anything she wants. Granville Phillips from Solutions Barbados, he could say anything he wants. So can Lynette Eastman. But you know what really matters? It matters what the Prime Minister says and what Chris Sinclair says. Those are the two people who make the difference because they are in charge. What have they said? And that is what you need to be telling us about since you seem to have a problem with what everybody else is saying.
But Mr. President, due to the respect to you, they say the swing authority by this their party. That's why I tell you I would like to have a debate with the opposition. I want to tell her, tell me if she's going to send more people to Barbados Labour Party or the government. I hear the economists tell you there's no...
Sir, you're being disingenuous. I personally remember, okay, at the last BLP conference, because I had a door story, at the last, the annual conference, in her speech, she made the point that they need people to be working. Because if you have people working, then you would be able to keep generating income within the country. She made that point.
Yeah, but
y'all keep coming here and being very disingenuous.
No,
stop
but who's
it.
Going to pay these people, Mr. Bright? There's a cost attached to everything in life.
But you know, but okay, people? You hear, and on the one hand, you're asking, okay, if you can send more people, and next time you say, we're going to need to keep people, and she's made that point, you say, well, who's going to pay them? But they're working now, so who's paying them now?
The point is that they have to go home, whether you like it or not.
So you are saying that they have to go home?
Yes.
So you are saying that, right?
Around 5,000 power workers have to go home.
And okay, so in other words, you are agreeing now with what the former governor, Dr. Lelwer, is basically saying, correct?
Yes, certainly.
That is your position. No, I want to establish that is your position, and that is not the position of the Democratic Labour Party, which you seem to push, okay, or the opposition, or anybody else. That is your position. Go right ahead.
Yes, the other thing too. Mm. How is she planning to restructure this weak economy? What are her plans? I have looked at part of the leak of the manifesto. And some of the plans doesn't make much sense to me. So I don't know if you have
me?
The
as far as I remember, the manifesto launch is next weekend.
Uh-huh.
Right, is next weekend. Yeah, I think the launch is Saturday. The manifesto launch is next weekend. And therefore, they're going to be talking left, right, and center. You and everybody else is... You're free to be able to question these people on that, not me. If I have the opportunity, after I've seen the manifesto, which is will be in black and white, and once it's in black and white, and you've set down your ideas, then you can be questioned on it. You won't have much chance to wiggle out because it's there in black and white. That's what I would do then. But before then, it is up basically to them to say what they want to say, just like it is for everybody else. All right, sir. We got to take a commercial break and we'll be right back.